All right, welcome to the Crow 777 Radio Podcast. Today I have Patrick Roddy with me. We are going to talk about a lot of different things, but this started out to be about chemtrails. But let's jump into some predictions here for a minute. Is there any way on this green plane we call Earth that there will not be a false flag at the Olympics? We see the kind of encoded trademarks where the McDonald's is being echoed. You know, we can go all the way back to San Ysidro to see McDonald's echoed in false flag events. But we see the Berlin false flag in the same breath. And for those old enough, you know, you remember that the first kind of real supposed Middle Eastern terrorists picking on Jews for some reason was at the Munich Olympics back in whatever it was, 70-something, early 70s. Didn't look it up before I began speaking. And we see all these other kind of little milestones that in my mind demonstrate that there is no way in heck we're going to get through these Olympics without some big false event. And while we're in the vein of prediction, it's pretty clear Hillary is going to be the next prez here in the United States, or the actor in chief, or however you choose to view that, isn't it? We see the same patterns before she picked her running mate. The patterns were demonstrating what we saw in the run-up for Barack. As we ran into the presidency of Barack, we saw Hollywood pumping out the strong black lead with the Denzel Washingtons and the like. And now we see the strong female lead being pushed out of Hollywood. What would be a good example? They always do it in the most popular of things. Oh, I know. Game of Thrones, of course. Who's the most popular character? Is the little Khaleesi girl who's beautiful, likes to be naked in front of camera, has a couple dragons. What's not to like there? But of course, she's going to be queen, and she's making queens. That strong female lead being pushed all over. An HBO show called Marco Polo, where there may be a female con behind Genghis. These ideas being pushed out the door. But when Hillary announced, or whoever does the announcing, I should say, that Kane was her running mate, all doubt left my mind. I mean, there it is. Kane, the biblical Kane? Are we looking at Tubal Kane? Are we looking at his father Kane? Are we looking at a mix of both? As soon as the language starts to demonstrate to us what it's going to be, and the language will come out, the encoded language we always see, will it be something like, Hillary and Kane are unable to do this or are able to do that? Will that be the kind of code we see telling us it's the father of Tubal Cain? Or will it be both? Tubal Cain, of course, being the Masonic mystery school sweetheart, attributed with inventing all metalworks and relationships to weaponry. And of course, that's encoded everywhere. In the Google logo, Tubal Cain is encoded. Or a good example, I guess, would be 007, where we see that 7 representing the kind of hockey stick cane in the encoding of that word, where it's a phallic symbol with two balls. 007 represents that, Tubal Cain. Many people are not really familiar with this kind of occult rendering, and I've asked some people who have knowledge on Cain and Tubal Cain to come on. We'll see if I can get any takers. The Cain side of things, the biblical Cain, Tubal's father, not so occult maybe, but the Tubal Cain thing is a little more occult, and I'm hoping I can get someone who can shed some knowledge. I've asked two people. I'd really prefer to have one because he has demonstrated in the past that he has good knowledge about this. But anyhow, this episode is about chemtrails, and we cover a lot of ground, and we cover a lot of things that have nothing to do with chemtrails. And in the second hour, at the end of the second hour, as we wrap up, there's quite a back and forth about the elite and the powers that be that run this joint, apparently. Oh, I'm sitting here trying to think what I wanted to mention. It's the drought. One thing that comes up in this talk, and this is a gentleman in San Francisco who's been monitoring and filming chemtrails and being active against chemtrails for a number of years, is we both came right out of the gate on the same page knowing that the California drought is 100% because of chemtrails. Kind of bolstering the idea that is a saying now that I don't really think is anything but true. There's a saying now that the weather is no longer forecast, it's scheduled. And Patrick goes into great detail, having quite a bit of knowledge, even having done lab tests on rainwater that he has personally collected, and it jives perfectly with the same lab tests I've seen from all over the world. Surprise, surprise. But here in the Northeast, the great state of Rhode Island, we're also in another drought. It's been hot as Hades here. The humidity's been 87% or more on days. This has been going on for a couple weeks. And I glanced at the headline of the paper today, and they say there is no end in sight for the Northeast drought. And here I am in a place where I see chemtrails all the time. At any rate, we talk about a lot of things, and I'm going to give you a quick rundown about what goes down in the second hour. And the second hour will be posted on crow777radio.com. I hope to see you all over there. And here's what we cover. Chemtrails, aerosol spraying, heavy metals that are in chemtrails, weather modification, which is a component of chemtrails, the Great Awakening, as it's being termed, predator rulers, parasite elite, lab tests of chemical chemtrail debris, the world population, false news, false flags, spraying lithium out of planes into the sky, which is a psychotropic drug, by the way. Spiritual war, good versus evil, the ruling class as a different species of human being, the effects of emotion, enlightenment, belief, ego traps, the elite bloodlines, the book 1984, the JFK debacle, blood sacrifice, the lie of history, or history, the lie that has been agreed upon, Sandy Hook, or Sandy Hoax as it's become to known, artificial weather, rigged sports, the Olympics, false flags, the Jewish year date that is about to roll over to 5777 or Blackjack 21, whatever you want to call it. Cain, and this has to do with Hillary's new running mate. Tubal Cain, predictive election outcomes. Cain and Abel, Masons, Hillary Clinton, lesser magic, Talmudic law. We have a heck of a back and forth about Talmudic law at the end of the second hour. The Talmud, Back to the Future and its predictive nature and how it pre-echoed 9/11, which is beyond doubt. I mean, it can be demonstrated black and white. Coercion, contracts. And when I say contracts, that's how the elites kind of run their false system that we live in, almost like contract law. The elite playbook, the encoding of movies, the psychopathic elites, divine nature, consciousness, and GMOs. Again, the last half of the second hour, and actually it's more than a second hour, it's about an hour and a half. The part that's not posted on YouTube. But anyhow, at the very end there, we have quite a back and forth on the number of the items I just listed. So there it is. Hope to see you over at crow777radio.com. Cheers. All right. Welcome to Crow 777 Radio Podcast. I have with me today Patrick Roddy. I had put out a call during one of my episodes recently in the membership area that I was interested in speaking with someone who'd spent, you know, some hands-on time observing, monitoring, and doing the work with chemtrails, and Patrick fits the bill. I thank the actually two or three members that gave me a link to his YouTube channel. Today we're going to talk primarily about chemtrails, but I did a pre-kind of interview to meet Patrick. I always have to do that to be sure that I'm speaking with someone who can speak in public. And there's many, many things that we could cover. And we're going to do this cold. Patrick and I discussed whether we were going to get some bullet points and topics down. Apparently, Patrick has worked in journalism, and he follows a rule that I would like to follow, don't always get to. And that's that sometimes when you're doing a cold call, an almost antenna system occurs when you're speaking, where topics come up where you don't know where they come from, you don't know exactly the source, but the information ends up being valuable. So anyhow, welcome aboard, Patrick.
Hey, thanks for having me on, and hello everyone listening.
So can you give us just a little background on yourself, Patrick?
Okay, so I was born in Belfast, Northern Ireland. I lived there till I was 18. Went to college, studied physics. Later on, I became a newspaper reporter. And I moved to San Francisco in 94 and did, you know, photography and all kinds of stuff. And I woke up to what I just call them the scumbags, you know, the ne'er-do-wells who've been trying to control world events and so on. in the mid 2000s. It's hard to say when. And I various topics that I looked at and included, like Building 7, vaccines, GMOs, illegal wars, Federal Reserve, all those sort of things. Chemtrails. But I found that, yes, you could spend a lot of time, it's worthy to raise awareness about things like vaccines and GMOs and stuff, but they have a lot of people already doing that, whereas there just aren't enough people raising awareness about what I consider the biggest issue, which is the spraying, which is affecting all life on Earth. It's really quite devastating. And it's completely covert. It's as covert as the Manhattan Project, even though it's in plain sight. And until we sort this one out, all life on Earth is threatened. It's really quite scary. For people who are brand new to it, they've heard about chemtrails, and they'll go online and they'll find the pro and the anti. There is, just like any covert any paid program at all, like with GMOs, like Monsanto hires armies of shills who are disinformation agents who will there's bots that will crawl the web for anything, any mention of glyphosate or GMO, and they will be alerted. And if anyone's talking critically about GMOs, these guys will come in with their disinformation talking points, and they'll use all kinds of logical fallacies. And there are many techniques that are used to derail conversations and make you look like a crazy person or whatever. And in fact, I actually have them on my website. There's a handbook called the Shield Handbook, which somebody got hold of and put on Pastebin. And if you go to my website, which is stopsprayingus-sf.com/shill-handbook, you'll see all the techniques. One of the most commonly used one is Rule 19. And Rule 19 is quite simple. It is ignore presented evidence, demand impossible proof. Well, that's just one of them. But there's lots to it. And I've been studying this for quite a while. So I have a background in physics, journalism, photography, and all those sort of things. And I'm actually quite fortunate. I chose my parents well. and I came from a scientific background. My father's professor of physiology. My mother spoke, I don't know how many languages. My father's father was a Methodist minister, and my mother's father was a spook. He actually worked for GCHQ during the war, and he was a career agent. He was actually a field agent. I don't know how much he exactly did, but he worked for the other side. So I actually have a little bit of that in me. So I can see both sides, and because really this is intelligence work. We're gathering information, and we are pushing the truth, whereas the other side are concealing the truth. I guess that's what I do. That's a little sort of an introduction, I suppose.
Yeah, certainly. So let me just jump straight into the topic at hand. For the first hour goes out on YouTube to anybody who's willing to listen, and that's why I try to ensure anything completely critical that everyone should be aware of gets covered in this first hour. And if I'm not off the mark, I think you and I probably agree that chemtrails are serving many purposes at the same time. Do you think that's a correct statement?
Well, absolutely. And actually, I think we should get a step back a little further, because when you go to, if you just do a search for chemtrails online, you'll get the Wikipedia definition, which will say, oh, no, this is just a harmless condensation trail. If you also go on Wikipedia and look up condensation, you will find that water will not condense. I mean, water comes in, you know, it's in liquid, gas, and solid form. Solid ice, liquid water, gas, the clear water vapor, which is just molecules of H2O floating around, bouncing into each other. They will not become liquid unless there is a condensation nucleus to attach to, like your bathroom mirror. The only time it will condense to itself in the absence of a condensation nucleus is when you have your relative humidity well above 100%, super saturated. And so if you see a plane going over and it's leaving a trail, there is an app you can use called Flight Radar 24, and it'll tell you what the flight is, and it'll say, okay, it's at, it's American Airlines at, 33,000 feet, blah, blah, blah. You can then go to, if you Google Wyoming soundings, the University of Wyoming has a, atmospheric sciences division, and they have this network of weather balloons that they send up. And these weather balloons will record temperature, humidity, and so on, all the way up as they go up to like 60,000 feet or so. So right now I'm in Chiloquin, Southern Oregon. The closest weather sounding balloon thing that goes up is in Medford, which is about an hour away. And you can go on their website and look at the corresponding altitude, and you can find out the temperature and relative humidity. And you'll see, the sky will be actually covered in trails one day, and you'll check the relative humidity will be like 18%. That is impossible for water to condense to itself. There are condensation nuclei. And the question is, what are these condensation nuclei? What's coming out of these planes? Some will say, oh, it's just some, there could be some impurity in the jet fuel. And that's worth exploring, because if there's soot coming out of, like, little carbon particles coming out of these engines, are we to believe that modern turbines are less efficient than they used to be? That's hard to believe. And what are all these other particles coming in there? The other thing you can look at is when you're watching these trails, you'll see start and stop points and gaps. If this was some impurity in the jet fuel, they can't be turning the engines on and off. So what's going on? And the shills will say, oh, but that's going through a warm pocket. There are all kinds of disinfo, bogus things.
Nonsense, yeah.
But basic physics, just look up condensation. These trails are not pure water vapor. The other thing, they'll say, oh yeah, but that's just when you combust a hydrocarbon, a fuel, you're going to get water vapor coming out, and that's just going to freeze because it's cold up there. Well, it's not going to freeze if there's no condensation nuclei, and it's coming out as a hot gas. And the other product is carbon dioxide. Neither of those are condensation nuclei. So what's going on? And of course, it's easy to then you can do rainwater analysis, which I've done plenty of, and I'm finding very large amounts of aluminum, barium, strontium, titanium, lithium, silicon was in the latest one I found in my last rainwater test. These things just shouldn't be in the air, and certainly not in the levels that we see. The most alarming of the metals that we do see is barium. Barium is highly, highly toxic. Less than 1 gram of barium will kill an adult human. And there was I recorded as high as 160 micrograms per liter in the rainwater in San Francisco. And San Francisco gets prevailing winds off 7,000 miles of clear ocean. So where's this coming from, apart from the obvious? So, and what I've done, I'm just some guy, I don't have degrees or any of this sort of stuff, but I've got, ears, a brain and a mouth, and you can just do some basic research and share it with people. And, what we really want to do is get people to just start looking into it and, find out for themselves. Don't, assume if somebody is from some institution or has degrees, they're necessarily telling the truth. You should, and don't assume what I'm saying is the truth either. Everybody should check their facts. But as for the multiple uses, the official line on geoengineering, that's what the, you know, that's the given name for this program. They say it is a proposal that they may need to do sometime in the future to save us all from global warming. It's by putting these particles into the atmosphere to reflect sunlight back into space. This will cool the surface of the planet and, you know, save us from global warming. That's a whole other thing. But if that was actually, if it's being deployed and that was its purpose, what they would do would be to find the most reflective particle that they can find and only spray that. But if you watch the skies and look at the behavior of these trails, they'll do all kinds of things. Some will rapidly expand, or some will dissipate within a few minutes. Others will drip. Some will have these like wispy things that come off the side of them. There's just all these different physical characteristics, which means there are different physical things that are being sprayed up there. If it's different things, there must be different purposes. And what has happened, we've had this giant spike. Alzheimer's has gone way up. I mean, back 50 years ago, senile dementia was around, but Alzheimer's per se really was actually quite a rare disease. Now it's, as of 2013, it's the sixth leading cause of death. People in their 20s are getting Alzheimer's, bees are getting Alzheimer's, and it's been, you know, the link between aluminum and Alzheimer's is very, very well established. Respiratory failure, people dying when their lungs collapse, or when lungs stop working, that has risen. That rose to the third leading cause of death in 2013. And remember, smoking is going down. We have better emissions on cars and planes, and, well, allegedly planes, factories. I mean, the West has been deindustrialized. We should have very clean air, but yet death from respiratory failure is going way up. And in Scotland last year, between 2014 and 2015, the death rate from respiratory failure went up 13.8% in 1 year. That is statistically significant. And why is that going on? I mean, when I was a kid, very few people had asthma or hay fever, but it's epidemic. I mean, everybody has, I don't know how many people, you know, family and friends who have some sort of breathing problem. And if you extrapolate those Scotland numbers across the globe, that's a massive culling. And the people behind the spraying, it's a covert program, but the Carnegie Foundation and the Gates Foundation are the two foundations that actually publicly fund a small amount of this quote research unquote. And all the other foundations, Ford, Rockefeller, and so on, they're all on board with, they won't. I haven't found a money trail to them, but those guys are all in on geoengineering, and they're also all in on depopulation. And whether the depopulation is, they might have some noble cause for this program, which has some fantastic benefit that they're not telling us about. But if it is, just tell us. But all we can see is our skies are getting trashed. Plants, insects, bird populations, insect populations are going way down. And illnesses and deaths in the human population are going way up. And it fits their agenda. They've all been in it. They're totally in on depopulation. And this is nothing new. If you read Plato's Republic, Plato was talking way back when about, we want to have this sort of scientific dictatorship. Well, he called it philosopher kings, you know, basically ruled by the elite, because we stupid people are, you know, too dumb to figure out how to rule ourselves. And, oh, by the way, there's too many ancient Greeks. the scumbags, as I call them. By the way, I should explain the scumbags. The scumbags are the people who decide to implement programs like geoengineering, GMOs, you know, the usury, the wars, all those sort of things. The douchebags are the people who work for them. So, like Soros, Gates, even the Rockefellers, they work for whoever is who has decided to do these things.
So wait a minute. You're suggesting, because you're kind of mentioning bankers there, and I think a lot of people out there assume that bankers are near the apex of the pyramid. You're suggesting that there's levels above these banking cartels.
Absolutely. If you go back into there's a very long but worthwhile YouTube video called The Palmerston Zoo, Palmerston Zoo. Webster Tarpley is talking about the powers that took ran England, you know, in the 17th and 18th century, and that has links back to the black nobility, the Venetian thing. And those guys were extremely dark. They were promoting bestiality and all kinds of creepy, the cultural Marxism you hear about today. There's nothing new on this. Everybody knows there's good and bad. There just is. I mean, like, dropping bombs on playgrounds is bad, and puppies and ice cream are good. There is a spectrum of good and evil, and most people are in the middle. The further you go towards each direction, there is spiritual forces that will help your goal depending on your will. And I've been going through this sort of awakening thing this year, and I've realized there is a force of good which will help you. And a lot of people poo-poo that. Oh no, everything is just atoms bumping around, and oh, Darwin, and all that kind of stuff. But if you go to Scientism is a religion. I mean, people have been conditioned to believe anything that's. If someone in a white coat comes on and says, "Oh yes, take you know, ask your doctor about whatever," they'll say, "Oh yeah, sure, that's going to be fine." But those people will talk about the Big Bang. They'll say, you know, everything came from the Big Bang. Well, we're all connected that way, at least. But there is undoubtedly spiritual forces afoot, and I consider the things like GMOs and chemtrails and whatnot to be manifestations of this evil power, and. The way we defeat that evil power isn't by using their tools being hate, fear, and violence. We use love, forgiveness, compassion, all those sort of things. Because if you look at, say you're having this really fantastic party and there's all these, everyone's laughing, having a good time. If somebody comes in and shouts or hits someone or whatever, that'll just ruin the vibe. But the reverse of that is, if you had a bunch of like Kissingers and Brzezinskis and David Rockefellers in a room being trying to like, you know, do some really horrible evil thing, and a 2-year-old comes in chasing a kitten, you know, that'll just ruin their evil thought. We need to, like I said, it's a spectrum. We need to increase the light on the other side of the border being people who are equally good and bad, the fence sitters, I suppose, but that's an impossibly small thing. If people who are slightly more bad than good, if we smile or give them a hug or whatever, and, you know, we can have more good than bad. on there. So it's like fluid. I consider this like plumbing, fluid mechanics. And because if we were to, I mean, some people will say, oh, we gotta fight them. We should like assassinate the pilots flying the plane. That's such a dumb idea. Because, well, first of all, it's going to create sympathy for their widows and orphans and stuff. You always have to do this from use what we have on our side, because they don't have that. They're the ones who have all the hate, fear, and violence. But
so let's break that down for a second, Patrick, because I have said for a long time, excuse me, that you don't need a war, a revolution, or a gun. You need a simple change of mind. But on top of that, excuse me, what you're pointing out here is critically important, and that is a provable assumption when we look at the kind of false news and the violence that is perpetrated, made up out of whole cloth, all these things to darken down, to pull people's mindset onto the wrong side of the fence you've been describing.
Yep.
For the longest time, I've been talking about intention. So many people come up and they say, well, I understand chemtrails are real, but when I try to talk to my family, it causes problems. My girlfriend wants to leave me. My coworkers don't want to hang around me anymore. And I've always responded to that in exactly the method that you're talking about is my response, where changing your mind, your personal mind, may be as much as you can contribute, because you don't want to damage your life because other people aren't ready to accept things. But at the base of things, we're talking about intention here, are we not?
Absolutely. And intention and will is extremely powerful. We've been programmed to think, oh, you're just some little individual. You're a drop in the ocean. You have no power. You have as much power as anyone if you choose to use it. People think, I have no power. Try getting a 2-year-old into a child seat if he or she doesn't want to get into it. You know, that's not going to happen. I mean, that's the child's will. Like, no, I'm not going in there until you convince. Until you get that child to accept, yes, I will do this, they're not going to do it. And I think this is partly why the scumbags are all about revelation of method. They'll always tell you what they're going to do because they need us to agree to, you know, war depravity and whatever the hell they're selling.
Now, wait a minute there, Patrick. What you are broaching here, in my mind, is one of the most critical things that people do not understand. Do you consider that this is almost like some kind of lesser magic in a way, where they're actually pre-announcing in kind of a covert, not so obvious way, exactly what they're doing? And if I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying this is kind of a subconscious method to get you to opt in to their wrong way.
And if you don't agree to it, they can't do anything. They are absolutely powerless. We have to accept what they're selling.
If they
don't want it, they're left holding it. Like, oh, what do we do with this? And it's simple. It really is. You can do this with just be that 2-year-old who ain't getting a child seat. You know.
We can't overstate the importance of what you've just said. I have on many occasions in many recent interviews stated that we are basically in an opt-in situation. And what's going on here is you're being coerced to opt into something. The first problem is many people don't understand that they're being coerced or that they're opting in.
I'm all about semantics here. Coerced into something, that is, like, you can't coerce. I mean, they're all about contract law, and that's two parties willingly agreeing to something. If I held a gun to your head, that is an invalid contract. So fooled into it, tricked into
right.
it,
that's
lied into it.
Exactly.
But coerced is, you know, they can't quite do that.
I think we're going to agree to disagree on that, because if you have control of all the information, like all the movies, all the music, all the popular culture, and you're seeding it with all these suggestive things to lead someone in a direction, first of all, the person may not even understand they're being led. That is coercion. You see, that is a bit like entrapment.
It's misdirection. Coercion is forcing someone into doing it. Like, it's like forcing a child into it, like pinning him down and like pushing him into the child seat. Yeah, but if you can say, "Oh, look over there," and like while they're not doing it, and then put him in, there has to be consent, otherwise it doesn't work. I mean, you can fool someone into consenting, but that's not quite.
Let's take that apart for a minute, though. There are many examples of people opting in or consenting that may not even understand they're opting in or consenting. But wait a minute. On the face of it, a contract is the meeting of the minds, right? An agreed contract is supposed to be where two minds come together, a meeting of the minds. If you're opting into something and not fully understanding you're opting into it, that does not satisfy. And you're absolutely right. They are all about the kind of corporate law-y sense of things, you know, contracts, all these other things. Matter of fact, our whole legal system and our whole civil system is kind of built around these ideas. But my point would be is how can we say that coercion is not going on for individuals that have no idea that they're opting in and have no idea that they were led to opt in?
How I would answer that is by quoting Albert Pike. Albert Pike was the head of Scottish Rite Freemasonry back in the 19th century. He was a Confederate general who has – there's a statue of him in Washington, D.C., which seems odd since they were the losing side. And in his book Morals and Dogma, which is the Freemasonry Bible, he said – or this might actually – it might have been in a letter to somebody, but he basically said, you know, if people don't read or look into what's being done to them, they deserve everything they get. They are meat on the table. None of this stuff is hidden. H.G. Wells talked about the open conspiracy. I mean, they write these books. They're quite proud of what they're up to. And if you don't read the terms and conditions, and if you don't look at what's in plain sight, you deserve this stuff. The Brzezinski's writing is all freely available on the web, where you talk like Between Two Ages. There's free PDFs all over the damn place. None of this is hidden. And if you choose not to look into stuff and study, they consider you like lower than cattle.
You know what? That is a hell of a response, and I will accept that response. I think I can't imagine you having given me a better response to what I just threw out there. It's a bit like the law of the jungle, isn't it? You're kind of voluntarily becoming the grass eater while you know there's lions in the field, but you're kind of pretending like there's no lions there.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you go and say, "Oh, look, there's an ice cream," and you just eat it without looking at the ingredients, you're the dumbass.
What you're saying is 100% correct. And the unfortunate truth here, I started to use the phrase American idiot a little more than I should have, so I backed off it. But it's truly the way I feel because of exactly what you're saying. But part of the problem here is all the way through school, all the way through work, all the way through these social conventions that we're all expected to go through.
Conditioning.
Yeah, we're being conditioned to, again, opt into the most unhelpful side of things, you know? Mm-hmm. And so maybe you're right. Maybe coercion is not the correct word, but damn, are we splitting hairs to make that distinction, in my view.
But it still does come down to consent. We have for them to inflict any harm on us, we need to consent.
You're right.
So one of the big things is not consenting to getting sprayed and not consenting to vaccines and not consent. I mean, all these places where they say, "Oh, it's there, there's mandatory vaccines." When you look closely into it, there's always a consent thing. You know, there'll be an agreement. Oh yes, you can't enroll your child into school unless they get a vaccine. Well, right. then you have to, you still consent to have your child vaccinated with the agreement to then bring him into a school. it's all legalisms. But the thing about all of this contract law, they are bound by it as well. So it can be used, and there's something I can't really talk about, which I will be using this as a weapon against them. And that's the other great thing, because again, this is being a spiritual battle. We cannot use their stuff, but if they hand you something and you say, I'm not going to sign for that, and they're holding it, you haven't actually created that evil thing. They have it and they're stuck with it, and then they have to deal with it.
What would be a good example of that?
Somebody come here says, it's almost like, you could the Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner, the Wile E. Coyote is like comes like has this like bomb with a fuse like lit and says, it tries to hand it to the Roadrunner, and the Roadrunner says, yeah, screw that, and takes off, and he's left holding the bomb, and it blows up in his face. But that can be, you can use that in the best example is the one that I'm going to do, but I can't talk about it. I'll be using the court system and a poison pill which came from the other side and just bouncing it back to them.
It's a bit like this. I'll give you the example. So in this country and in many other countries, when you're born, there's a legal corporation set up in your name. You can always recognize the legal corporation because all the letters in your name are uppercase capitalized.
Yeah.
And so whenever you're dragged before the Magi straight, the magic man in the black robe up there sitting in the kind of admiralty court that's hidden behind all these legalisms, you are the piece of paper in his hand. They are trying to force you to be that paper. And so using what you just said, I would submit a good example of that would be standing up and saying, that paper is not me. That legal fiction in your hand, I'm a living human being. I am not that legal fiction. I mean, that would be a good example, would it not?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's my ex-girlfriend, she lives in San Francisco, and one day we came back and there was a note on the door saying, oh, by the way, you're getting smart meters on Monday. And I thought, well, that's not going to happen. And it didn't. And here's how. I flyered it was a giant building. It was like 200 units in there. And so when the guy, and so we had people at both entrances, come Monday morning, and the guy comes in, who tries to come in and says, but here to do the smart meter. I said, no, you can't, go away. Because my ex-girlfriend, she owns her condo. And with the condo, she also owns 1/200th of the common areas, and this guy who wants to install the smart meters wanted to go across her property, and she said, no, you don't have my consent, and if you don't leave, that's trespass, and that's common law going back to Magna Carta. And then he said, but I have an easement to go in there. I said, yeah, you have an easement to read the meters, you don't have an easement to install new equipment. And simple contract law, that building didn't get any smart meters. Well, use their stuff against them.
That's an interesting thing, because in San Diego, people who owned their homes, well, that's a whole other thing. They were working on owning their homes.
Nobody owns
them. Yeah, exactly, right. So people who were living in homes they feel as if they own were completely forced into, that may be a strong word. They were put in a situation where they were told they were getting smart meters, and if they didn't, they were going to not be allowed to get electricity or something like this, and that's illegal not to have a house. You know, it was this whole legal construct that was being put up. But, I mean, how about a person who's in an apartment building where they're renting from someone else who owns the building? I mean, would there be a way for that individual to escape the harm of that smart meter?
Oh, absolutely, I did.
How?
I pay the bill. The contract's with me. Piece of cake.
So, I mean, what is the physical process of preventing the smart meter from being installed?
well, in California, or at least in Southern California, well, Northern California, PG&E, a Rothschild company, by the way. There's an opt-out procedure, and you just, you know, call them, say, hey, get this thing off, and they have to. Because monopolies have to go through public utilities commissions, and for them to be able to have that monopoly, they have to go through some legislative sort of, you know, agency stuff. And there was enough people kicked up a stink. There's a There are ways. So, but you got to look into it. Just do your own research.
Right. So people listening might be wondering why we're making a big deal out of smart meters. Maybe we should define why you should not want a smart meter in the vicinity of where you exist.
Well, a couple of things about smart meters. First of all, they are very powerful radio transmitters. They need to be able to reach miles away. But when you talk to a utility, they'll say, the output of this is really low, because they'll average out, what was the output over an hour, say. But these are sending out like millisecond spikes, which are more powerful than, you know, like cell phone towers. And they are radio frequency is a class 2 be carcinogen, according to the World Health Organization. But the health thing is only that to me is secondary. I mean, we are awash in this electromagnetic soup, which is really bad. But it's the word smart actually stands for self-monitoring, analyzing, and reporting technology.
Jesus.
So smart phone, car, meter, whatever, is basically a spy device. It'll send data back to, you know, home office and be shared with their quote-unquote partners and be connected into the global smart grid.
Just so people can understand, with one of these things on your house, they can know everything about how you are living. They know when your television turns on. They know anything that uses energy of any kind can be monitored, put in a database, data mined across a huge sampling of a county or part of a state, and you would be shocked to understand what can be data mined out of that. But I would like to add something really quick here, Patrick, because some people may be rolling their eyes saying, so what, there's a transmitter there. When I was in the Marine Corps, my job was radio operator. There was a rule that you could not be, the minimum distance you could be to the antenna hill, so all your transmitting goes to antennas, the minimum distance you had to be a mile away. And there were two reasons cited. The first one is the enemy can triangulate your position of where it's transmitting from the antennas and they can blow you up. So mm-hmm. that makes sense. The second reason is it's not healthy to be near antenna hill. You see, so just so people understand that this is not some hippy-dippy new age BS, it is a known thing that these radio waves, this radiation from a radio, is very harmful to the human body.
Well, there was an epidemiological study done in San Francisco back in the 80s, I believe, before cell phones and all this wireless stuff came into be so prevalent. Sutro Tower, there's this big, TV tower thing. And the closer you live to this tower, the higher your rate for, I think it was lymphoma. It's not good. That's understood. And I think they finally admitted that, cell phones are bad, but, you know, they sort of buried it in, you know, like page 37B of the New York Times, and no one ever repeated that again. And if you, the next time you get a phone, if you look at the look around the small print, it'll say you got to keep the phone like so many inches away from your head, which is stupid because people have it right up against their ear. So yeah, that's established. But the spying thing, that ties into technocracy, which is something everybody really needs to know about. I referred earlier to Zbigniew Brzezinski's book, Between Two Ages, America and the Technotronic Era, which is written in 1970. Back in the 1930s, there was this thing called the technocracy movement. And what they wanted to do was, they came out of Columbia and Chicago, a Rockefeller money thing. And they had the same idea as Plato, that, you know, the people are too stupid to run themselves. You need philosopher kings, experts like bankers or so on to run everything. And they wanted to get rid of governments, borders, elections, all that kind of stuff. But their overarching thing was to replace the economic system completely and get rid of supply and demand, money, currency, all that stuff, and replace it with energy credits. This was in the 1930s. And they were, instead of, you know, having, you know, a gallon of milk costing, you know, $3 or whatever, it would be so many energy credits. And now, you know, with this, you hear more and more talk about like carbon credits. That comes from the technocracy movement back in the 1930s.
How do you acquire a credit in that paradigm?
Well, everything that you do is measured. I mean, but the thing is, like, if say you have a gold-backed currency, you know how much gold there is, and you divide that up by how many people there are, and so you can figure out how much a piece of gold is worth. If you're gonna base things on energy, you need to know how much energy there is. You have to get a complete, comprehensive, up-to-date inventory of all human resources and activities, and so you have to have intricate monitoring of everything that there is, so you can price it. And that couldn't have worked. I mean, it was impossible to do that in the 1930s before high-speed computing and the internet. Now it's doable, or it certainly is. And that's why you have smart meters, smart everything. And so if they, I think at some point down the road, they do want to blow up the global economy and then put everyone onto an energy-based thing. And that's when, and it ties in with Agenda 21 and stuff. There is a book people need to read, and it is called Technocracy Rising. I think it's called the Trojan Horse of Global Transformation by Patrick M. Wood. That will explain what's going on, and that's why I'm dead set against that. I actually wrote an article on my website about this. It's called, if you go to Stop Spraying Us, -sf.com/selling-chemtrails, that goes into it. But that, yeah, that was my biggest thing about the that thing. And it, how it ties in with the spraying is, unless people are fully on board with, oh, we're all going to die because of, you know, carbon emissions from humans, it's going to cause this climate catastrophe. They first can't sell us on spraying crap in the sky to stop that happening. But this agenda, this technological enslavement, technocracy, absolutely hinges on people buying into this. Unfortunately, since 1998, temperatures have been kind of flat. They call it the pause. And the longer it goes without things getting significantly warmer, they can't scare people into buying into that. So you can create extreme weather events by screwing, like spraying stuff and causing, like, you know, floods and droughts and all kinds of stuff. So that is part of it.
It's a provable thing, though. I've already used the example in other shows I've done. I live now within walking distance of a beach that I have been coming to since I was 3 years old. There is a chain link fence at the very highest water mark that hardly ever gets hit. In my lifetime, I think that fence has been hit 3, 4, not very many times. You can always tell when there's been a high enough significant storm and a tide to hit the fence because there's seaweed and everything caught in the fence. There has been no tide in the last 15 to 20 years that has gone high enough to hit that fence, which demonstrates the nonsense we're being told about global warming is untrue, because one of the claims is that the sea levels are already rising and, you know, all these projections of coastal cities that are going to go underwater and all this other nonsense. And, you know, we're being shown the polar ice caps melting. Anyone who knows the Grand Tetons and other landmarks that had big glaciers in them, you can go there now and understand that in the 50s there was a heck of a lot more glacier there. But I'm here to tell you the water level has not risen perceptively perceptibly one iota in my lifetime. And there's proof, because every ocean is connected. There's not actually a Pacific and Atlantic Ocean if you want to come down to it. All water, major water oceans are connected. So if the water level rises in one area, it's going to generally rise everywhere. So I would point that out. But we've got about, I don't know, just under 15 minutes to the top of the hour. And I do want to pull this back around specifically to chemtrails, what they may be doing, some of the things like this, and talk a little bit more about how people can recognize that chemtrails are a real thing. And I would add, before I hand it back to you, I've seen some research, pretty convincing research, that demonstrates that the modern high bypass jet engine is all but incapable of making a contrail of any type. And even when it does, it only lasts very momentarily. So let me throw it back over to you, and let's hear where you think why the most immediate reasons why chemtrails are occurring. And I think we agree there's probably many things being accomplished, and we both have observed that there are many different types of chemtrails being sprayed. I've even filmed them mixing chemicals in the air above my house. But let's switch it back over to that and start with your thoughts on the modern high bypass jet engine. Do you think there's any truth to that?
It doesn't even matter about that, because if you you can do it yourself at home. Get a little spray bottle and spray something, and then look at the spray. It evaporates. It goes away because you're not at 100% humidity. I mean, these little water droplets, if they are supposedly water droplets, cannot persist unless it's supersaturated, period. And if you can look at, again, just go on Wikipedia, look up condensation, look at the physics of condensation. This stuff should not stay there. And there are plenty of resources. I mean, one of my favorite ones is NASA Worldview, which is worldview.earthdata.nasa.gov. And you can see satellite imagery of the entire planet. You can see some of these trails stretching thousands of miles. That's just impossible unless there are condensation nuclei. And the question is, what are these condensation nuclei? And we're finding all these weird things up in the rain and whatnot. And I mean, I don't get invited to their meetings, so I don't know exactly what they're up to. But what I can see, the results are they're screwing with the weather, and it's having a devastating effect on human health. And I actually brought a paper. It's on my website again, stopsprayingus-sf.com/paper, called "The Human Health Impacts of Proposed Geoengineering Solutions," where I just talk about, hey, you know, these guys, they'd be, and in fact, that's what they, because in public, there's some people who go out and say, oh yeah, we might have to do this to save the planet. They'll only talk about sulfates or sulfuric acid, but their own papers say those are ineffective for what they're trying to do, because they're the wrong shape, they fall out of the sky. Instead, you've got to use nanoparticulate aluminum, barium, strontium, and all these other things. And that's what we're finding in the rainwater and in blood tests and hair tests and bark tests. And the planet's absolutely saturated with this stuff now. I mean, there's so much evidence.
You have done tests on the water firsthand, right? You're not relying on someone else's data like I have done up to this point.
No, you just collect it and send it to a lab. Yeah, I don't know if the labs have been gotten to. I mean, who knows? But right. These are NELAP certified labs, and they'll have the chain of custody and all that kind of stuff. They cannot. I mean, people say, "Oh, but you contaminated, or there was some." No. This is on the roof of a San Francisco apartment building with prevailing winds off 7,000 miles of clear ocean. What's that amount of barium or strontium, titanium, and whatever in there? And anyone can look up, and just the skies are weird.
Right.
And you know, they're putting stuff into cartoons. I actually saw Zootopia, which is actually a good movie. But the skies are trashed in that, like, and in
all the car commercials have it now.
In fact, there was a movie called Ants, ANTZ. That was the Woody Allen one.
Yep.
Which came out in 1998 before they got really heavy with the spraying. And there's a scene in there. You look up, the sky's got like a grid in it. This is before it became commonplace. But I should also mention that although it did ramp up in the late 90s, it's been going on a very long time. I mean, the patents go back to 1910, and that they were using weather manipulation in the Napoleonic Wars. Wow. They actually, yeah, because they noticed that whenever there was a battle and there was the cannons were like firing, the sulfur in the cannons would cause precipitation. So what they would do, if they wanted to protect themselves against a cavalry charge, they'd fire sulfur out of cannons to make it rain, to make the ground soft, so it would take a cavalry, it would be harder for horseback, soldiers to get to you. And it probably goes a lot further back. None of this is new. It's a very simple, long established science. Some of the shields will say, but look at these pictures from World War II. You'll see these bombers and there's these white trails coming out of it. How that happened, bombers, when they were coming over a target and they were getting chased by enemy fighters, they would inject water into the engines and the steam boosted the output of the engines up to 50%. They couldn't do it for too long. It will trash the engines. And that's called war mode. And that's also on Wikipedia. I mean, none of this stuff is hidden. All of this stuff is there if you choose to look for it.
Well, there's a whole campaign going on, though, that is designed. See, here's the biggest problem people like you and I face. There are so many people who either refuse to understand, are trying to understand, but they're being fooled by the shills, as you refer to them. As an example, there's an ad for this new product called No Jet Lag that I just saw on television. And it has a plane leaving a chemtrail all the way across. The word no in the product name is right over the chemtrail. And then under the title No Jet Lag is the word homeopathic. There are examples of blue-skied movies and commercials that were shot in the 70s that have had chemtrails added into them after the fact, which is simple with the technology in Hollywood today. This is why I brought up the high bypass modern jet engine, because if you can demonstrate that it's nearly impossible for a modern jet engine to even leave a trail, for these people that need to get on board with us and understand what is going on, these are good examples. But beyond weather manipulation, I know that you've got a lot of footage on your YouTube channel because you've been out doing what I did for thousands of hours, filming chemtrails. I used to see in chemtrails, in the cloud deck, that after they'd been spraying a while, and the cloud deck, that milky white sky forms, or just bunches of clouds, what I called frequency patterns.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Another
very old technology.
Right. What I noticed about them, first of all, I was trained as a radio operator, so I do know something of radio waves, is first of all, I noticed that it was a very specific area. In other words, the whole sky was not being, some wind was not coming through and making all the clouds look like this. It was these things I knew were left by chem planes, and it would not match the wind direction. And I would even go down and look at the wind direction at different altitudes, but I would notice a couple things. Having been a radio operator, I know that the troughs of a very ultra low frequency, the troughs are further apart. So if you were to go down to the beach and look at the sand under waves, because waves are a frequency pattern, that pattern it makes in the sand is what we're talking about here up in chem debris. And I would see two kinds. I would see what looked like very high frequency patterns and very low frequency patterns. Do you have any experience or any knowledge about what I'm talking about here?
Oh, absolutely. Everyone can see this, because people will say, oh, no, that's just a gravity wave because there's a wet air going over like a mountain range or something, and it'll cause this pattern. If that's the case, how come they're coming in at different directions and they're different frequencies?
Right.
And you can actually measure, and if you measure the distance between the troughs, you can figure out what the wavelength is and the direction. And stuff's coming on from different directions and different frequencies. There's the word HARP comes up a lot, That's the facility up in Alaska, but there's tons of them. There's this technology. There's ELF waves, VLF, ULF, there's GWEN, there's NEXRAD, there's all kinds of stuff. And you can see this, again, within the NASA worldview, you can see these patterns from space. The other thing with, you can, with the different particles that they use, I mean, they can have like the overt, the non-covert open weather modification companies out there, like Weather Modification Inc. They will use silver iodide to seed clouds to make it rain, and these are hydrophilic. And so they'll draw in water vapor, and it'll just come in, and it'll just come down and rain. What's in the covert program, they're using things like alumina, and that's like a desiccant, and you'll flood the sky with these tiny particles, and they'll suck up whatever free humidity there is. But for it to actually come down as rain, the condensation nucleus has to get a large enough amount of water on it so it can fall out of suspension and come down as rain. And when you flood the sky with these, it's just huge, huge numbers of these particles, you can stop the rain because it acts like a big sponge. But when you put frequencies through it, you can charge these particles and you can make them either rain or not rain and do all kinds of things. So I'm not in their meeting, so I don't know the exact purpose for all of these things, but there's all kinds of stuff you can do with electromagnetic energy.
You just said some pretty crucial things, because I mean, based on some of the things you just mentioned, that is very strong evidence, for example, that the terrible drought that is going on in California.
Totally manufactured.
Completely engineered. And of course, when we consider that since the early part of the 19th or the 20th century, they've been able to seed clouds to make it rain, and yet the breadbasket of the world, the Central Valley of California, has been under...
Vegetable basket.
Yeah, vegetable basket for a terrible drought for, I don't even know how many years it's been now, coming up on 7, 8, 9, I don't mm-hmm. know.
Oh, yeah.
This is an engineered thing, and they're... If you look at this by extension, already understanding that chemtrails are causing the West Coast drought,
and floods in the East.
Right. And so what you've got to understand is that the remaining farmers that have dodged Monsanto and they don't accept the Monsanto contract farm model, where they don't own seed, they have to buy Monsanto seed and all these other things, these people are slowly going under, which... Not only is the drought bad enough, not only is it that we can draw the line that chemtrails are causing the drought, but now we're watching the production of food collapse in a way that's going to create a vacuum and allow the Monsantos to own 100% of food production in that area.
Well, this ties back to Agenda 21, which was the extension from of technocracy. It's not just about monitoring, it's about controlling and limiting and rationing and of all inputs. Inputs include energy, water, air is going to be one eventually. They're going to be rationing that. Well, they'll figure out a way of rationing that. And then concentration of another input would be of finance. So like that's why all these companies are merging. And if you look at you'll look at companies that are supposedly competitors, they have interlocking directorships on their boards. And it seems like it's not good. We should, and there's this big push for interdependence. We want to be independent. We want to be able to supply our own food, water, and all that kind of stuff, and shelter, and not be dependent on the corporations. And corporations are just an arm of the scumbags.
No, there's no doubt about that. We've pulled up to the top of the hour here, Patrick. So we're going to continue in unless we talk about something crucially important, and I feel the need to pull it back into the open YouTube part of the show. Would you like to take a 5-minute break, or do you want to push through the second hour?
I'll take a quick break.
Okay, we'll take maybe 5 to 10 minute break, and that'll wrap up the first hour of Crow 777 Radio with Patrick Roddy. And again, if we get into things in the members-only portion that I think are critically important for general population to be aware of, I will probably pull some of those things back and extend the first hour. So there it is, and Patrick, I'll see you in roughly 5 to 10 minutes, sir.
Awesome. Well, see you soon.
There it is. All right, there it is, the end of the first hour. The second hour and a half, or nearly an hour and a half, is posted at crow777radio.com. And again, the second half of the episode posted there is really quite a back and forth, and particularly we get into a whole thing about the system of deception and Talmudic law and how it relates to contract law and whether or not it's coercion and the idea of mala in se, or things being bad on the face of them. In other words, you would never have to tell a human being that's not correct on the face of the thing that we're talking about. Any human being would know that that is not correct or true. Anyhow, there it is. I hope to see you over at Crow Triple Radio. I'm sorry, Crow777radio.com. Cheers.